It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
It's Friday
on my mind.
Focus is Friday.
Oh, Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday night. Tonight I'm doing my show from my favorite gun store, Northwest Armory, and that's always fun as well. A lot of people coming through, and we were also talking about that Canadian, the guy who's part of their special forces, who's now set a brand new sniper record, a 2-mile-plus shot that took out an Islamic State fighter as he was trying to attack Iraqi security forces 2 miles away, and people have been saying, what kind of gun is that? It's a TAC 50. I think it's a Chi-Tac. Kind of an expensive gun, not a very light gun, 26 pounds. You don't want to be packing that one around in the woods for very long, but a very nice rifle. Anyway, on First Amendment Friday, we're glad to take your calls. Couple of things going on. Former FBI Director James Comey has not made many appearances since his testimony about Russian interference in the 2016 election, but recently he visited the New York Times building. Should we be worried about more leaks from Comey to the press? Sounds like he was one of the major leakers in the previous administration. Another celebrity is talking about assassinating the president yet again, Johnny Depp this time. Is this trend of celebrity hate against President Trump leading to actual violence against politicians? There's a brand new report out saying 30 GOP congressmen have been threatened or attacked since May. It's a little hard to ignore the connection. Even more disturbing, one Democrat was caught on tape saying some pretty awful things about House Majority Whip Steve Scalise being shot at GOP baseball practice last week. And my friend Dr. Henry Miller joins me to tell us how the EPA is standing in the way of America's prosperity and to question whether or not EPA head Scott Pruitt will be able to turn that agency around. And make sure to cast a vote in my quick poll. You'll find that online at LarsLarson.com. Here's the way we frame the question tonight. Is actor Johnny Depp's assassination comment a threat against the life of President Trump? I'd vote yes on that question. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let me go first to Steve. Hey, Steve, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, I just have one question, and you were talking about the subject that you're talking about is germane to that question. Why does everybody hate Donald Trump so much? I mean, it's like the first time I've ever seen such a visceral hatred out coming out of people that they actually want to kill the man.
Well, how about this? Let me divide it up into different groups because different people have reasons for hating President Trump. The federal bureaucracy, which is fighting him right now, hates Donald Trump because he threatens both their jobs and their power and influence. That's one group. The Democrats hate Donald Trump because they figured that they owned the presidency after Obama and that Hillary Clinton was owed the presidency and that she had a right to it that no one else should get in the way of. They were so sure of that, they literally cheated one of their own candidates, Bernie Sanders, out of getting a shot at the nomination. So they hate him for that. Republicans, some of them...
To the point where they want to kill him?
Well, yeah, I guess. Because let's face it, as was pointed out last night by my friend Ann Coulter, every single political assassination in American history since the country became a country has been committed by a liberal. Now, do you think there's a pattern there? If you notice that every single political assassination in American history was committed by a liberal, except for those who were just flat-out crazy. I mean, the ones that were just Looney Tunes and they were killing because they were Looney Tunes, and there are some people like that. But all the other ones, go back to John Wilkes Booth and take a look at that and go from there forward.
And usually most of those Looney Tunes are liberals, you know?
Well, it is a mental disorder. We all know that. Steve, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Kevin in Reno. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening on KKFT. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, just a little health care story for you. My mother spent half her year in Mexico and half her year in the United States. She's born in Belgium. She's not a Latina. She has just chosen to retire down there. She needed to have a procedure down there. She had diverticulitis. She had a four-hour procedure, two surgeons, one anesthesiologist, an eight-night stay in a private room. What do you think her – and she paid for it all out of pocket, no insurance. What do you think the bill was?
I have no idea, but I'm willing to bet it's a tiny fraction of what it would have cost her in America.
It was $14,000.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. Okay, now, let me tell you the downside of that. I mean, because I think American health care could be a lot cheaper, but you have to get the lawyers out of it. If she had had a problem, how do you think she would have done in suing either the hospital or the doctors or the anesthesiologist?
Oh, no, I agree, but you're going right to the point in that, you know, if that is the difference, that's just, that's a huge difference. I mean, she was quoted that procedure here would have been $125,000 to $150,000.
I'm not, yeah, 10 times as much. I think that makes sense.
And it's $14,000. Hey, and can I do one other thing? I'm a naysayer with you right now.
All right, on what?
Real quick.
Sure.
I've always, for a long time, I've had to pay for my insurance. Before Obamacare, it was $500. When Obamacare kicked in, overnight it went to $1,500.
Yep.
That's $18,000, and that's 5 years ago. Today it would probably be, for a family of five without subsidies, $20,000 to $24,000 a year out of my pocket. $94,000 doesn't allow me enough money to pay that bill.
It would if two things happen. One thing is you have to get the private marketplace to get rid of the lawyers. That's one. Two, you got to be able to sell across state lines so there's real competition. And you have to get some transparency in hospital costs. You actually know what your mother's surgery cost. In America, if you ask the average person who's covered by any kind of insurance, what did that medical procedure cost? They don't have the first clue. Now, they can tell you to the last dime what their last car cost. I bet they can even tell you what their last electric bill was, probably to the penny. They know exactly what their rent is. Every other significant cost paid by an American, they know it almost to the penny. But on health care, they don't have the first clue. Well, if you don't have any involvement in what something costs, if you could walk in and buy a car and you didn't have to care what it costs, you know, or somebody else, because somebody else is paying the bill, then you don't act like a consumer. Obviously, your mother is smart. She shops around and says, I'm not going to do it in America. In America, the copay alone would have been more than everything she paid to those Mexican doctors. We have to get Americans back to where they treat health care like they treat every other price of something. You walk into a grocery store, you'll watch somebody spend 5 minutes picking out their produce because they're looking for the best price depending on what kind of produce they're buying. And they say, I'm not buying that at this time of the year because that's too much per pound. In other words, these are people worried about saving pennies. But if they walk into a doctor's office or they walk into a hospital and they're about to buy some medical procedure or the doctor's about to prescribe a pharmaceutical, most of them have no reason whatsoever to care what it costs. Let's go to Eric in Iowa. Eric, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
You betcha.
I'll try to keep my questions brief. I feel like you and I could talk healthcare all day. So three out of the five people in my family have pre-existing conditions.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of us are a little bit worried about what the Republican plan to repeal and maybe replace Obamacare would do to us. And I'm going to try to break down my questions into two parts. We've heard a lot of talk about the increase in health insurance premiums over the years. And from what I understand, those increases haven't been passed on directly to many American consumers.
You're going to have to get to the question or we're going to run out of time. Quick.
Is it not true that only 0.5% or maybe 1% of Americans buy their health care directly from health insurance companies and don't get it provided by their employer?
Well, it depends on how you count them up. Medicare, Medicaid, group insurance, and private health care insurance. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's summer vacation time for most of us, but scammers are hard at work all the same. Here are some tips to avoid becoming a victim. Before making a deposit on that beach rental, check the realtor's license. Make sure they're legit. Watch for door-to-door solicitors who want your money and tell them you'll check them out online first. And at hotels, beware of fake menus requesting credit card numbers for late-night eats. And if you're relocating, hire only the most reputable moving companies. Somebody's identity gets stolen every 2 seconds. Now, they can steal it in ways you may not even find if you're only monitoring your credit. Thieves could sell your info on the dark web or get an online payday loan in your name. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats. If they detect your information, they're going to send you an alert. And if there's a problem, U.S.-based restoration specialists work to fix it. Nobody's going to prevent all identity theft, nor can they monitor every transaction at all businesses. LifeLock, though, can uncover threats you might miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code Larson. That's Larson. We'll get you 10% off on your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% today. On the phone with me right now, a great friend of the program is Dr. Henry Miller from Stanford. He is the Robert Wesson Fellow in Scientific Philosophy and Public Policy at the Hoover Institution. Doc, good to have you back.
Great to be with you, as always, Lars.
I know that everything that most of what's getting the attention of people today is the Russia investigation, which is vapor. And then, of course, you've got health care, which is, big debate as well. And we may not be paying as much attention about the reforms that are being attempted right now by people like Scott Pruitt over at the EPA. So give me your take on whether or not you think we can get something real done to rein in this out-of-control federal agency.
Well, I think we can, finally, and Pruitt seems to be the guy to do it. When he was doing his confirmation hearings, he said the Obama administration didn't bother with statutes. They displaced Congress, disregarded the law, and in general said they would act in their own way. That now ends at EPA. And I think he and OMB Director Mick Mulvaney have begun to try to reform EPA in the way that it hurts the most, and that's through the budget. So EPA is taking big budget cuts, and they seem to be directed to consider science more seriously than they have. The other thing is EPA has been a rogue agency. It's really been out of control. It's been dishonest and has lied to Congress and to consumers, and that's certainly going to change as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, I want to see this happen because I don't know if Americans really appreciate, Doc, just how much the EPA has held back the expansion of business and opportunities for Americans in the workplace.
Oh, absolutely. It's wiped out entire sectors of biotechnology, for example. It was once thought that we'd have preparations of microorganisms that could eat up oil spills and other toxic wastes. And that just hasn't happened because EPA has made the testing and development and regulatory approval just too expensive. Similarly, scientists in industry and at the University of California came up with a preparation of benign microorganisms that when sprayed on crops like potatoes and strawberries would prevent frost damage. And EPA treated that preparation as a pesticide for reasons that are very convoluted. And it was abandoned because the development costs were simply going to be too high. As you're aware, every spring we have late frosts that kill crops in the Carolinas and California and elsewhere, and a lot of that would have been preventable had EPA not gotten in the way. One thing I think we all have to recognize, though, is that there are some actions by EPA since its inception in the Nixon administration that have been beneficial. So our waters are cleaner. The air is cleaner. There's no longer that toxic smog over Los Angeles. But EPA has indulged in excesses, even in the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, that are frankly dishonest as well as unwise. Those are the kinds of excesses that need to be reined in. They do have a few legitimate purposes, but they need to be managed in the executive branch. They need to be overseen by Congress, and they just need to do a more responsible and science-based job.
Absolutely. Dr. Henry Miller, thank you very much. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate what you do at the Hoover Institution.
Always good to be with you, and we look forward to seeing you there soon, Lord.
Absolutely. We'll be back down to Hoover very, very soon. Great institution, a library second only to the Library of Congress in terms of what it contains. To your calls now on this First Amendment Friday night. Eric's on the line from California. From Iowa. Eric, you're a naysayer. What's on your mind?
Yes, I am a naysayer. I'm a proud liberal, and I heard you comment that you wanted to increase competition in the insurance marketplace to lower prices. Is
yeah.
that correct?
Yep.
So why not create a public option?
What do you call a public option? One where we put tax dollars in?
It could be tax dollars.
Well, I mean, if the public option is just letting me buy through the government, through a government website, instead of like buying, if there were a government version of Amazon, I could buy products from that government version instead of the private version. I'm always going to have a bias in favor of the private version because private companies tend to be much more responsive to customer need. The government tends to be inflexible, and they tend to say it's one size fits all. You take what you take or else. So if you want to buy tires in Iowa, where you are, you can probably take your pick of a dozen different places to buy tires. Imagine if you had to buy tires from the DMV. So you go down to the DMV and they say, okay, take a number and take a chair. It'll be an hour before we get to you. If a private company treated you that way, you'd walk out the door and go to their competitor. But when the government is the only Right. game in town, then they can screw you over all day long and twice on Sunday, except they don't work on Sunday. So I don't want a government option that way. If you're saying government subsidy, well, who do you want to give those subsidies to? If you're talking about the elderly and the people who are poor and have no way to fix that, I think we're a generous country. But right now we give Medicaid to a group of people that includes 25% of that group are working age Americans who are sound of mind and sound of body with no children at home. Why am I paying the health care costs of somebody who refuses to work?
Can I respond?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not talking about subsidies, but I'll respond to that real quick. Those 25% of people that you're talking about, it's not that they're not working, it's that they can't find jobs that offer health insurance as a benefit.
No. But what I'm saying is, no, hold on. No, that's not what we're talking about. Because food stamps are treated the same way. For a long time, a lot of states have said, even if you don't try to find a job, we'll still give you food stamps. Maine began to say 2 years ago, if you aren't working at least 20 hours a week or on a path to a job, out trying to get a job through training, we're not giving you food stamps. Three-quarters of their food stamp recipients in that group, able-bodied, working age, no kids, sound of mind, they dropped out of the program. They said, I don't want to work for food stamps. So if you did the same thing with Medicaid and said, if you're not at least trying to find a job, if you're not working 20 hours a week, which is not going to, you know, cause you to break a sweat, then we're not going to give you free health insurance at somebody else's expense. Is that unreasonable?
No, I believe they should be working. I will agree with you on that. But can I respond to the public option?
Please, say it quickly. We've got 30 to the break.
Okay, so Medicare has an overhead cost of 2.5%.
Yeah, health because they dump the rest of their administrative costs on the doctors and hospitals. It's a fake number.
Okay, health insurance companies have overhead costs of 20% because of the profits that they want to give to their CEOs and shareholders.
Profit makes things efficient. Lack of profit means greater inefficiency. That's the bottom line, and I appreciate the naysayer call. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Opinion alert. It's honestly provocative talk on the Lars Larson Show.
Ah, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. You know what First Amendment Fridays are, and if you don't, I'd be glad to introduce you to the idea. Everybody gets a chance to sound off, and naysayers go to the head of the line as long as you stick around for a couple of questions. Jesus joins us now. Jesus, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I just wanted to get your info about the that North Korean ex-detainee, you know, it's sad that he passed away, But, I mean, part of me says, you know, why would the United States, you know, intervene in something where one of their citizens went into a different country, stole something, and obviously had to pay the price?
You know, I had some of the same feeling. I don't think that Otto Warmbier behaved in the most sensible way. When you're in another country, I would never go to North Korea. But having said all that, the North Koreans had no business torturing him and hurting him. And I think the evidence, and we won't ever really, I think, get true evidence. We'll not know what actually happened on the ground. But he went in there a healthy young man, and he came out in a coma and days away from his death. So can we guess that he was not treated appropriately? Yes. Why would we do that? I'd go back to the Reagan example, where there were terrorists who carried out a bombing in Germany that hurt American citizens, and Ronald Reagan retaliated against Libya under Gaddafi at the time. So should we say that when another country mistreats an American citizen, even if the American citizen shouldn't have been there or did something he didn't do, like tearing down a poster, I think our government should go to bat for us, and other countries should learn you don't go out and abuse American citizens, even if you think you're justified in doing it. And I don't think they were justified in doing what they did. Rahim Kassam joins me now, who's the editor-in-chief of Breitbart London and a distinguished fellow at the Gatestone Institute. Rahim, good to have you back on the program. How are you?
Great, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing well, except I'm really concerned about, you know, the fact that we see an awful lot of deference paid to Muslims in this world, and even when there are terrorist acts that are carried out, somehow there are people always ready to make excuses, and yet the Muslims are not exactly tolerant, if you will, in their treatment of ex-Muslims. And I know that you've written about this, and I wanted to have you tell the story to my audience.
Yeah, well, look, let me just say from the outset, I really appreciate it, because it's become an issue close to my heart, even though, you know, complaining about being called names isn't really my style. But it became my style this week, because over the last few weeks and months, I've started to hear from people who have wanted to leave Islam, started to hear from people who have wanted to reform Islam, to reject Sharia law. And it got to the point where I started to realize, actually, the names I get called on a daily basis, House Muslim, Uncle Tom, Coconut, these things that tend to roll off my back actually are affecting people in a very serious way. The question is often asked, Lars, when there is a terrorist attack, when the Muslim community, whichever part of the Muslim community is implicated in something like this, the question is often asked, where are the moderate Muslim voices? And it's a fine question to ask, but the answer is not that they don't exist. The answer is that they are shouted down, they are intimidated, they are heckled, they are threatened. In some cases, they are physically assaulted, beaten to within an inch of their lives, their families are threatened, they're shunned. I call it Sharia shaming. This is the term I've come up with for it so far, because it actually has its roots in the Quran. The Quran and the Hadiths in Islam are very clear about how you treat who you regard as non-Muslims, who you regard as apostates. And in a lot of cases, these can still be people who believe themselves to be practicing Muslims, but because you are not staunch enough, or fundamentalist enough, or literalist enough, you can be shunned by the community. And we're seeing it taking place all across the Western world at the moment. We've seen it in the United Kingdom. The media doesn't want to talk about it. And the political left, Lars, they don't just want to not talk about it. I mean, you would think this would be a big progressive issue in letting people determine who they are for themselves. But they actually contribute to it. I get about 50% of that kind of abuse, the Uncle Tom, the House Muslim, all of that kind of stuff. 50% of it comes from white liberals. And so I felt it incumbent upon myself, for many people in the world, that we start talking about this.
Well, and in fact, the book you wrote, No-Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Spreading to America, is very important. But it seems to me a sign of an unhealthy religion, in the same way that if you decide, I'm not a Catholic, but if you were part of the Catholic Church and then you said, I'm leaving, I don't like the policies of the church, well, that's actually healthy for Catholicism because it means if they start losing significant numbers of people, they may decide we need to change the way that we're doing business. And the same thing is true of Protestants, the same thing is true of Mormons and any other group. But if you have a group that says, we're not only going to benignly distance ourselves from you, but we will actually hurt you because as an apostate that you're subject to the death penalty in some countries under Islam, that to me is an extremely unhealthy religion that seems to have drawn up rules that make it incapable of reform. When you say we don't reform, we just kill the people who don't believe the way we do or leave the church or leave the mosque.
Well, people often wonder why the left in Islam find themselves so intrinsically linked nowadays. And the more I think about it, the more it comes down to just how similar they are in their tactics, just how weak they are in their arguments. You know, the left has managed to dominate not through convincing arguments, but actually through taking over institutions and pointing and screaming witch and heretic at anybody that doesn't want to abide by their new way of thinking. And Islam does the same thing. When your arguments are so weak, when you cannot convey something and you cannot debate something and win, then you resort to force. And that's what Islam does. That's why it does it. Because actually, people who read the Quran can see the big, glaring, gaping holes in it. They can see the inequality. They can see the tyranny. They can read for themselves just how this has no basis to be a major world religion in the year 2017. And therefore, what are they afraid of right now, especially in the West, when their adherents, their followers, their flock are watching Western television and buying Western clothes and assimilating and wanting to integrate? You can feel it out there. Look at what they did in the Middle East and in the Arab world in the 60s and 70s and 80s. You know, Egypt was a country where they used to laugh at the idea of women having to wear the niqab. But because the ideology is so weak, they decided to employ this by force. And that's why the left gets along so well with them.
Well, and it's very strange because the left in this country will quickly shout you down if you show any sign that you are anti-LGBT. And yet the ultimate anti-LGBT has to be Sharia law as practiced by people who are in the Muslim world who believe in it. And yet the left seems to love Islam, even though it is antithetical to gays, to people who've been divorced, to people who've left the religion, and yet they would shout you down if you were a member of any other group and had those same attitudes about it. It's a pleasure to have you on, Raheem, and it'd be great to have you back sometime for a longer period of time.
Lars, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you.
Raheem Kassam, the author of No Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Spreading to America. He is the editor-in-chief of Breitbart London. I want you to vote in our quick poll tonight. It doesn't cost you anything, and I'd just like to know how people see this issue. But is actor Johnny Depp's assassination comment a threat against the life of President Trump? I would vote yes in that question. It is a threat, and I think that there have to be some consequences for these celebrities in America who have decided to come out and openly call for violence against Republicans, conservatives, and backers of President Trump and the president himself as well. Our quick poll can be found at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by AMAC. Just go to amac.us to join or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better for you and better for America. And while you're on the website, vote in my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing trip for a chance to win some fantastic prizes. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know, I get to the weekends, and if it's nice, and it's going to be nice this weekend in my neck of the woods, I get out and get some yard work done. But at 58, I feel those aches and pains when I get to the next day after that day of yard work. Well, Relief Factor has helped me a ton. It's a 100% research-based formula. And listen, the ingredients in this are all natural, and they go after the things that cause you those aches and pains. Things like exercise, overexertion, aging, and just plain old everyday living. And I've had plenty of that as well. I'd like you to check it out yourself because it's worked for me, it's worked for my friends, it's worked for my wife, and it's worked for even my producer, Carl, has benefited from it. And 100 million Americans suffer from ongoing pain due to aging, exercise, and overexertion. So try it out the way I did. Start with a three-week quick start. That's $19.95. Works out to about 95 cents a day, less than the cost of a cup of coffee every day. For pain relief, visit ReliefFactor.com or call 1-800-500-8384. Find it at ReliefFactor.com. One word, that's ReliefFactor.com. Let's go to your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Trish is on the line from Sampson, Alabama. Hey, Trish, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi. I listen to your program all the time because you're very informed and very fair.
Thank you.
I called about the Medicaid and the Medicare.
Yes.
What Obamacare is, it's like they're all tangled up with that. And my problem is all day for months, all day, several times an hour, well into the night, are these advertisements for drug treatment centers.
Yep.
And that's part of what the health care is going to pay for. It's like, those people have a choice, and they could go to community outreach programs instead of eating up the Medicaid and the Medicare that older people and disabled people, truly disabled people, really need.
Trish, you have hit on one of my favorite aspects of where this needs to be changed. And I think Republicans don't have the guts to fix it. You're right. Billions of dollars are spent under Obamacare to fund drug treatment. In other words, someone who decided to take illegal drugs, either taking pharmaceuticals illegally or shooting heroin in their veins or meth or any of those others, they get drug treatment. And the most optimistic projections of drug treatment are that one person in four is going to have some kind of cure. And that usually only comes if they're willing to actually say, I want to get off these drugs. But it's tremendously expensive. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars and all of it being paid for by American taxpayers. And I'm like you. If you decided to stick that needle in your arm, if you decided to abuse prescription meds, the media is always telling the story that the poor guy who had a knee injury or a back injury and ended up hooked on heroin because he originally started with opioids. Do you know there's a major study that shows that maybe 5% of the people who are addicted got addicted by starting with a legitimately prescribed pharmaceutical and then ended up going to heroin. The other 95%, according to that major study, started by abusing drugs. They took drugs for fun. They ran out of the pharmaceuticals, they went to street heroin, or they started with the street heroin and went to pharmaceuticals. So you decided to addict yourself, and now you want American taxpayers to pay for it. I'm not a fan of that either. Let's go to Julie. Hey, Julie, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind, ma'am?
Well, I know a person who works for a local hospital, and she said there is millions of dollars in a fund for Obamacare.
Probably billions.
Yeah, probably. And she said it's just sitting there. They could put it to use, but they don't. And I don't know if you can add to that or not.
Well, if you're asking where is that money, I don't know that I could tell you there's some secret account that has all the money in it to pay for everything we need. I don't think that exists. The Congress has allocated literally billions of dollars to make make Obamacare work. Some of it's for Medicaid, some of it's for other things. But if you're thinking that somewhere the government has a secret fund that will pay for all this stuff, that's not the case. The fact is that right now American health care costs a lot of money. It probably costs too much money. And we don't have the money to fund everything that everybody could want or need. We don't have it. So you have to decide when you're scarce of resources, you have to figure out how you're going to allocate what you have. So if your question is there a secret fund where there's a whole bunch of money that would pay for all the things that Americans want or need? No, there is no such thing. Now, are there monies that have been allocated to the states to pay for all kinds of medical care? Sure. But it's not enough to cover everything that everybody wants, which is one reason why most states that expanded Medicaid under Obamacare are now looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of costs, and they don't know how to pay for it. That's fact one. Fact two is that you have a bunch of major insurance companies that have said just covering those folks in the so-called private marketplace, the ones who bought Obamacare policies who are not covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or a private group health insurance, those subsidies are not enough to make it happen. And so major companies just this week, Anthem Healthcare, pulled out of Indiana and Ohio. Why? Because they were losing their shirts at it. They were providing medical care where they were, the premiums being paid by people were not matching. The amount of money coming in was not matching the amount of money going out. That's the simple way to look at it. So if you think there's a secret fund somewhere, there is not, ma'am.
Yeah, okay. It is what it is for now, I guess. I can't do anything.
Well, you know, I think you were being fed a line of baloney by somebody who says, well, heck, the Congress could just pay for this. Well, let me tell you something. The Congress appropriates the money that runs the United States federal government. And right now we have a federal government that spends about $4 trillion a year, but only has about $3.5 trillion of income, which is about like a person who makes $35,000 a year who spends $40,000 a year. That is a person who is putting the rest of that spending, the money above their income, on their credit card. And that's what the federal government has been doing for a couple of decades, is putting all the extra spending on its credit card. Well, the credit card now has $20 trillion in debt on it, and we still have a government that spends more than it takes in. So when people say, well, the government could just write a check for this, crank up the printing presses, print the money, and make it happen, that's simply not true. Unless you think we can keep borrowing money indefinitely. Julie, right now interest rates are relatively low. The federal government has to pay interest on that whole $20 trillion we owe. To give you a simple comparison, it's like a friend of yours who lives high on the hog by spending on his credit card. And at some point, the credit card companies all say, we're not giving you another dime of credit. And all of a sudden, the guy finds out that his paycheck won't even pay the minimum payment on the credit card bills he already owes. And he's gotten used to living high on the hog, and the money isn't there anymore. You know, we don't want to be that country. And if interest rates jump even a small amount, the federal government could find itself spending more on interest than it does on national defense. And that would be crazy, because a country without national defense isn't a country anymore. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.